Okay, so it's 2019.
It is.
It's 2019 now. It
feels like crazy. 2018. I'm still writing that on my checks. You know?
You still write checks. Okay.
As far as you know.
I'm still entering it on my Venmo.
That's right.
So, here's what we're doing this week. We are presenting some Rock in the Suburbs greatest hits from 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Classic episodes that you need to hear if you didn't hear them already. And if you did hear them already, hear them again.
You know, and it's interesting, Jim, we had a 500th episode. We had sort of an Ask Us Anything episode. And Bud Verge asked, what are some of the episodes you're most proudest of? And this one didn't come up to my mind at that moment.
But yeah.
Definitely, now that I've had a little time to think about it, I was really proud that we did this Lee Baines interview, saw that show, talked to him. He was so gracious. He's so committed and such a hard worker. And there's such a American rock and roll band.
Right. So we're going to present to you here the part one of the interview with Lee Baines III. If you want, you can go back to our archive and listen to the other parts as well.
I would.
But the thing I really liked about this, Patrick, was you brought this artist to my attention sometime in 2017, I believe. And when we saw that he was coming through town, we decided to see if we can get the interview. And
we owe Doug Mulvihill the credit all the way down because he's the guy that brought it to our attention or my attention to begin
to your
with.
Attempt, right. That's right. So, there, thank you for that, Doug. So the thing I just really liked about it, and this the thing I like about interviewing just, I guess you would say, sort of up and coming artists like this is just, you know, how committed they are, how much they really want to like prove themselves. But just in this case, just also just how thoughtful he is. Man. You know, he really is dedicated to his craft. And I think you're going to hear the passion for what he does come through here.
Yep.
All right. So I see you have the tape threaded
That's
up.
That's right. Let's hit play.
Press play.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk Southern rock.
Ooh, excellent. Molly Hatchet, Black Oak, Arkansas, Black Crows, Skynyrd, and 38 Special.
Well, yeah, those are Southern rock bands, but we're going to talk about a different kind of good old boy. Okay, Patrick.
Yes, Jim.
We haven't done a band interview in a while.
No, we haven't.
It's been a little while, but we got one set up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did.
At the Songbird.
Yep.
It's a venue in D.C. It's a really interesting venue. If anybody
visits
D.C.,
yeah.
It really feels like you're like in somebody's basement.
It is.
When you watch your show.
Like the basement of a frat house.
Yes,
it's cool.
It's great.
It's got a great vibe.
So we love that. So thank you to the Songbird because they helped us out and, you know, giving us a spot to do the interview and all that. But what I wanted to say here is that I know this was somebody you really, really wanted to meet and interview, right?
I did, yeah. And it was one of those cases of like, wow, this is going to be so incredible. And then when the time comes, you're like, I'm so nervous to actually talk to this guy. But he turned out to be such a down-to-earth, incredible person. And so Lee Baines III, he fronts a band called the Glorifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And as anyone who regularly listens to this show every day knows that our good friend Doug Mulvihill turned us on to their album, Youth Detention.
Right.
Became my favorite album. I got obsessed with it, too. It was my favorite album from last year. And just, you know, the incredible combination of, like, really hard punk rock with a little bit of Southern influence because the band comes from Alabama.
And they really embrace that.
They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah, their identity is super important to them.
Right.
And also his lyrics. You know, he's very literate and not in a not in like a poetry of the working Southern man kind of way, but much more about individuals and their sort of daily battles and what they go through in identifying with being Southern. And so it's just really intoxicating combination of stuff. And I really think they hit their stride. They had two previous albums that came out on Sub Pop, but for this one, they just took it to a whole different level. You know, it's really kind of a triumph for them altogether. So not only did we want to talk to Lee, but we wanted to see him play.
Yes.
Because I've watched so many YouTube videos of the band like ripping it up. So,
all right. So why don't we get into the Lee Baines interview? This is part one. We actually divide this up into three parts.
Three parts.
So you're going to hear it over the course of the next 3 days. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And let's get into the interview with Lee Baines.
The sanctuary and Haley Williams quite an obsession. For Palestine's place to take.
So Lee, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. How long have you guys been on the road? This time.
Yeah. A little over 3 weeks this trip. But we've been on tour a lot in 2018.
Right.
So, last year. But.
Yeah. So catch us up a little bit about what the band's been doing since Youth Detention came out about a year ago, right?
Yep.
Now?
Yep.
Tremendous album. My favorite album of 2017, as listeners to this podcast will have heard me rant about.
We've talked about it before on the show.
Plenty of times.
I appreciate y'all doing that.
Absolutely. So talk about what you guys have been doing. Has it just been touring?
For the last year, it's been a lot of touring. And then other than that, I've been writing a lot for, whatever's coming up next. Yeah. And then, I've been doing more solo shows as well, which I haven't done in the past.
Interesting.
But I would have, I've just had some people places where we play a lot be like, man, if you're ever interested in just coming and playing by yourself, mm-hmm. we'd have you. So I've been doing a little bit more of that, which has been pretty, interesting. I've enjoyed it more than I thought that I would.
Yeah.
I guess.
So let me tell you a little bit about how Jim and I and our Rock in the Suburbs community learned about Youth Detention and your music. We had I have an old friend who I know back from the 80s and 90s when I was probably your age and going to a lot of shows. And he's a loyal listener, and he wrote in one day and said, you got to hear this Youth Detention, Lee Bans and the Glory Friars. And so it became kind of a thing with us. We all kind of got really into it. His name's Doug Mulvihill. Shout out to Doug Mulvihill. He lives in Richmond. I think he's going to try to see you guys tomorrow at Hardywood Park. But
awesome.
He wrote up I asked him if he had any questions, and of course he fired off a bunch.
Nice.
But this one fits right in with what you're just talking about. So let me read that to you and have you answer. He says, you have an approach to the band that seems very workmanlike, which reminds me of Bob Mould. That is a job to be taken very seriously. It's obviously what you do for a living, but do you see the band as a job similar to any other common profession?
That's a great question. And that's something that's been interesting to me over the last few years, is looking at art as work, because I think growing up, I had the idea that it wasn't work. Work was something that was valuable and important, and that art was kind of folly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it may be partly because of that, that has driven me to work really hard at songwriting and then also with touring, and stuff. And, and then more over the last couple of 3 years, and I would say with writing Youth Detention, I started conceiving of, writing songs as labor, and as work, and as something that, required, elbow grease kind of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, there's the writer Rick Bragg, the nonfiction writer. And I remember reading an essay by him one time that was, it was something to the effect of against the muse. And he was perturbed by the concept of the muse.
Right.
And he was it's inspiration or creativity or whatever isn't a spigot that you can turn on and off. It's I have to get up every day and work at it, whether I feel inspired or not, and that's
instead
definitely
waiting for it to come to you. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's totally how I've approached it. And, and I think that we as a band definitely look at it playing and touring that way. It's particularly, I guess, being, from a place where it's you it's if you can play shows in Birmingham or where I live in Atlanta, you can play every couple of 3 weeks, but it's nobody in New York or DC or Chicago or Nebraska or whatever is ever gonna find out about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's because there's, it's not somebody's going to be at the show and write it up and do whatever. Yeah. So it's if you want people to hear the music, you have to take it to them kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I'm really fortunate that all three of the guys in the band regard touring in that same kind of work, mm-hmm. Work like way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Oh,
I want to talk a little bit about Southern identity, because I know that's a big theme in your music.
Yeah.
You grew up in Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Ohio.
Okay.
But I did, when I was later in life, I did, as an adult, move to Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And I lived there for 10 years. And it was a curious thing for me to try to see how Northerners then sort of looked at Southerners by virtue of living in the South then, you know, right. Because when you would tell people I live in Kentucky, they'd be like, why? Why would you move to Kentucky? You know? Right. And I'd be like, no, it's Louisville. It's really cool. And they just couldn't get over that. Right.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about, from your perspective, you know, what does it mean to you, I guess, to be a Southerner today, or what was your, you know, sort of upbringing like, and what were the things that you were, that you look back on now that say, like, the way I was brought up sort of defines me, or I had to work to sort of reject that in some ways, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, but a really complicated one, I guess, for me. So, you know, it's interesting, like, because writing so much around identity and cultural identity and Southernness and stuff like that, I wind up in a lot of conversations with people about that.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, I feel like everybody kind of has a story of like when they realized that they were Southern, you know what I mean? Like, and I guess for me, like, I grew up always knowing that because it was talked about in my family a lot.
In what way?
In that, well, you know, my parents and grandparents and extended family talked about like that we were Southern, and because we were Southern, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's like they would talk about the Civil War and about the Civil Rights Movement and all these sort of like defining moments and struggles in the South. And my dad in particular is like kind of a student of Southern political history, and okay. My mom is like really into Southern literature, and so you know, it's like there was, and you know, I had, you know, people in my family who were totally of the, you know, kind of lost cause, you know, Confederate idea that, like, you know, this was a, you know, these were like noble people fighting for their land and their heritage and culture and all that stuff. So it's like, but then at the same time, like, I grew up in Birmingham, like on the, you know, civil rights battleground, you know, and knew people who had lived, you know, under Jim Crow, and who had been sprayed by the hoses and bit by the dogs, you know what I'm saying? So right. It's like, I never remember not being conscious of the fact that I was Southern, you know what I mean? But I guess like what was complicated was figuring out what the hell that means,
right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm still figuring that out, you know? And
yeah.
I think the thing that I've settled on, or the, at least the baseline, is that it's different for every Southerner. The South is different, you know what I mean? And, so that's, and that's, you know, in my writing, I really focus on my personal experience and context and environment and perspective, because I can't speak to the South, because all I know is my experience of it, you know?
Well, so. And I think that voice is important, and it's the same thing with like a guy like Patterson Hood or somebody like that, because it maybe breaks through some of the stereotypes that people have of the South, right? And I think that's important for people to understand that, because people in the North, or, you know, the Midwest or the West Coast or whatever, just tend to think that the South is this homogenous
totally
thing, and everybody sort of thinks the same way, right?
Sure. Yeah, totally. And I think that's such a natural conclusion to that, like, kind of you know, binary way of thinking, or like the you know, self and the other, you know. I mean, I feel like that growing up, I probably did that with like the idea of the North, quote unquote. And it's like on this tour going, you know, we went up through like the Midwest, like Iowa and Wisconsin, and like up along the Great Lakes and up New England. And it's like none of those places are the same. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're all different from one another.
Right.
And, it's interesting, like how flattening that process is, like the othering, you know, like this is us and that's them. It's like it erases so much nuance and richness and humanity in people, you know.
So one more thing. So yeah. On the same line. So do you think that you and your band have a mission statement? Is there something you're trying to do beyond just, you know, rock out, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I for sure have a sense of mission, I guess. I don't know that I've ever verbalized it super clearly, but I think it is to speak to structures and systems of power and erasure, and my role in that and my place in that, you know, and try to do that in an authentic, honest, you know, and hopefully like beautiful and truthful way, yeah. You know.
I would say you're doing that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
One last thing is, do you get a different reaction from audiences in, you know, Alabama, Georgia than you do in like Iowa, Wisconsin?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, man. It's like, that's hard for me to gauge, I guess, really. Okay. I will say like one thing that I think is really cool is that sometimes when people like talk to me at a show about like a record or something or a song, what's like really powerful to me is when folks relate it to their personal experience and context, you know? And so like this year we went to continental Europe for the first time, and there were a couple of conversations I had in Spain, one with a fellow from the Basque country and one with a fellow from Catalonia.
Ah, interesting.
And they were both relating their experiences in those places, you know, in relationship to Spain and in relationship to, you know, the, you know, just kind of a global politics and economics in a way that was specific to them, but, you know, related to the songs, which I thought was like really cool, you know. And then had a similar conversation with a fella from Milwaukee on this tour, you know. Yeah. And a guy from a small town in Illinois, you know, who, you know, yeah, saw pieces of their own experience in the songs. And like, that's like the most that I could hope for, you know, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So building on that, and also the fact that, you know, sociopolitical issues bubble very close to the surface in youth detention, what does it feel like playing in D.C.? Does it feel different when you come here? Do you feel like you have to do something a little different? Because I think, you know, Jim and I have seeing shows here, it seems like, oh, this band's coming to D.C. This is where they're going to break out their political speech.
Is that right? Yeah. I mean,
just from growing up here, you always would see it. Like, sure, this is when I'm going to make my statement tonight. Because,
right,
you know, all the government workers are going to be there. Right? So does it feel any different to you
That's
when you
awesome.
Come here?
Man, I don't know. I really do love coming here.
Do you?
I do, yeah. It's one of, I don't know. And I guess I would group, like, I loved all the Discord bands and all that.
Yeah.
You know, totally. That's like a huge, huge influence on my ethos and mm-hmm. everything. So, but it's, I do appreciate the fact that like so many of the folks we've gotten to meet here, are like really engaged in the work that
yeah.
is so critical right now. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I just, you know, I get pretty fired up about being here in the midst of that.
Okay, so tying into a little bit about what we talked about in yesterday's episode,
yeah.
So Lee has an affinity for Fugazi, I think, in particular, and a lot
yeah.
of the Discord bands. And when we saw the show after we did this interview, he actually even, you know, mentioned Fugazi from the stage.
He did.
He never got to see them, but, you know, sort of he was excited to be in D.C. and sort of the place, you know, where Fugazi was born and
exactly,
played and
right.
all that, right?
Yeah, and their work ethic and kind of the way they, you know, just did things, put things together, and also had a political side to them, but weren't overtly political. And I think that kind of squares with some of the stuff Lee does, right?
Yes.
Yeah. He's not writing, you know, direct protest songs, but they're always present in his music. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And he's, you know, as we will hear later in the week, he's a guy that takes this very seriously. It's a job to him, and he clocks in every day and goes to work and works really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's apparent when you listen to the music.
Mm-hmm. And you talk to him.
All right, very good. So you'll want to tune in
every day.
Every day. Mm-hmm. You'll hear more from Lee Baines tomorrow and the next day.
Yep.
So our thanks again to Lee. The way you can hear the show is on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Play or other big podcast platforms.
Yeah.
If you want to comment at all about Lee Baines, if you're familiar with his music, we would love to hear from you or really anything music related. You can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. There you go. And then you leave a message there, and then we get your voice on a future episode.
Yeah.
Or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Suburbs Pod. All right.
All right.
Let's get on to day two.
Cool.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
He was perturbed by the concept of the muse. Right.